Blog Talk Radio.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Yep, how's it going? Well, here we are, Friday night, and the first show of the new year. We didn't do one on New Year's. That's a little tough to do on New Year's. That one didn't happen. Actually, it wanted to. But we quickly said, no, not going to happen. And anyway, so at about 9:15, we have an old friend coming on the air. And right now, it's just me, all by my lonesome. All by my lonesome. That's right. Just me. And I guess it would be best to say, obviously, the CFL isn't that busy. I will prime the pump, and I will let you know that first things first, the subjects today are GMs, coaches, and players. Some didn't have a good year last year. Some find themselves in new surroundings, and yet some others just plainly weren't playing. And either were hurt or, you know, I'm just wondering from your perspective, from the listener, what do you think is or are some of the people in the CFL that are looking for a better year? Now, the obvious is, of course, the Ottawa Redblacks, who are brand new, spanking brand new. And I'm not talking Mayor Rob Ford spanking. I'm talking football spanking. You know, they are brand new, and they've got a whole, you know, future in front of them. Yet, they were the busiest this past week. They sign on 6'5", 320-pound Anthony Barrett, played university football for the Concordia Stingers. He was selected by the Montreal Alouettes in the second round, 16th overall in the 2011 CFL Canadian Draft. Now, he's a Verdun native, you know, played in CIS Quebec. He was a conference all-star and a second-team CIS All-Canadian in 2010. He also was a three-time all-star at Vanier College in the CJEP League. So, the Red Blacks have another player. Now, they've got a long way to go, you know, so, but teams, they have been the busiest. And I think another busy team we'll talk about too as well. Also, they signed two import players, defensive back Eddie Elder, Arizona State, and receiver Antoine Hicks from Texas Christian. Elder is from California, Sacramento in particular. He transferred in 2010 from a junior college in Arizona State. Now, he excelled primarily as a safety. Now, in two seasons, he did start for the Sun Devils 20 of the 25 games the team played in 2011. So, you know, he's a great player. He's skilled, and he made 66 tackles. He's 5'10", 185 pounds. And he also attended camp in 2012, the local NFL team, the Arizona Cardinals. Now, he was added to the practice roster of the Montreal Alouettes in 2012 and signed with the Alouettes in November before being released in June of 2013. That, of course, is before the season started. Now, the Red Blacks also signed, as I said, Antoine Hicks. Now, he's from Arlington, Texas. He attended Red Blacks tryout camp at Texas Christian in October. Impressed, was invited. Played four seasons at TCU. The most recent was in 11-12, when he made 33 receptions for 347 yards and one lonely touchdown. Now, he also scored three majors on six rushing attempts. So there's a little bit of versatility. The 6'2", 212-pound. You know, he's a touchdown maker. That's what they're referring to him here. And during 09 and 10 campaign, by reaching the end zone 10 times on 32 touches, six TDs on 23 receptions, and four majors on nine rushing attempts. And that was for the Horned Frogs. Well, there's a team I'd like to play for, the Horned Frogs. Now, we got a lot of other stuff we can discuss. We could, you know, I could, for those of you that don't like reading, I can also give you an indication of, we could go over what is felt as far as the Ottawa Red Blacks is concerned, you know, in the expansion draft, the players they picked up. But maybe we'll go through that a little bit later. Maybe with the guys, if the guys start showing up. Now, I know Townsend's on the road, so it's going to be difficult for him. Now, in other news, the BC Lions signed James Quick Parker's son, Kenyon Parker. Now, he played football in New Westminster. Now, he went to other NCAA division universities. He did end up playing for the Oregon State University Beavers. And so, you know, he's an exciting player. Now, you know, his dad was awesome. He's a Hall of Famer. I mean, what else can you say? So he basically now has worked his way back home. 6 years ago he left, and now he's back home, and he'll be playing for the BC Lions. That's awesome. That's great. Good for him, and good for the BC Lion fans. And, of course, you know, he gets to play near home. And for that, you know, instead of bouncing around, that's a pretty good deal when you think about it. That's the one thing about the CFL that's awesome, I'll tell you. A lot of the players that want to play at home, they get every opportunity, I'll tell you. It's the one league for some reason, the hometown boys, they go back home. Now, you know, we hear about players who play in hockey, and let's say for the Leafs or any other team, they talk about the home team discount. In the CFL, that really does happen. It really does. There is a home team discount because when one, you know, compares the salary and the expenses of moving in to a new town, it isn't too hard to believe that playing at home is worth a lot more. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the Saskatchewan Wild Riders, who won the Grey Cup, of course. From January 4th to January 7th, are you listening, guys, you the Rough Rider fans, the Rider Pride? January 4th, they will be in Saskatoon at the Ronald McDonald House. It'll be closed to the public. They will be visiting the players, that is, visiting with children and their families, and they'll have an opportunity to get their picture taken with the Grey Cup. Later on that day, they'll be going to Royal University Hospital, the children's floor, and that, again, will be closed to the public, visiting with patients of their families, signing autographs, and more pictures with the Grey Cup. Then they'll find themselves at the Saskatoon Blades hockey game at 6 p.m. at the Credit Union Center. Now, the players will be for photos all game long. Now, how's that? On January 5th, well, I don't know how much of it you missed, guys, but apparently there was an audio problem. Are you there, Mike?
Yes, sir. How y'all doing?
I just had a mic problem. Well, it wasn't going on the air, I don't think. And I don't even know how long, because you're the only one. And I see that I missed, I guess, a call from, that might have been Manasseh. I'll give Manasseh a call.
Oh. Wow.
I got to check here and see. That seems to be the right number. We'll give him a call. Anyway, so I was just trying to go over some stuff that's going on in the CFL, and wow, I don't know if I'll find out when the replay comes out how dead I was for and for how long. All of a sudden,
yeah,
I heard
dead
it dialed.
For a minute.
Hmm.
Yeah, you were dead for a minute.
Well, I brought it back. And joining us, old-time friend, Manasseh. How's it going, buddy?
Doing good, Frank. How you doing?
Good, good, good.
Hey, what's up, Manasseh?
Hey, Mark,
the irony is, I was talking about where the Grey Cup's going to be with Saskatchewan. I was just given the tour the itinerary is from January 4th to January 7th. Give me a minute, guys, to try and redo this for the Saskatchewan fans. On January 4th, they'll be in Saskatoon at the Ronald McDonald House. It'll be closed to the public. The Cup, of course, and the players will be visiting with the children and their families. Pictures, of course, with the Grey Cup. Royal University Hospital, the children's floor, closed to the public. Visit with patients and their families, sign autographs and pictures with the Cup again. And then later that night, 6 p.m., they'll be at the Saskatoon Blades hockey game and at the Credit Union Center. Players will be available for autographs during intermission. And the Cup will be on display and available for photos all game long. On January 5th, they'll be in Lloydminster, Service Sports Center at 1 p.m., community meet and greet, free to the public, autographs and pictures with the Grey Cup. Then they'll be at the Golf Curling Center. It'll be a private function, basically, because it'll be a player dinner at the exhibition grounds at 6 p.m. And on January 6th, they'll be in North Battleford Central School. It'll be closed to the public. It'll be a school assembly, as the same will be held at McKittrick School, closed to the public, Breedy School, closed to the public, and those will all be school assemblies. North Battleford Communiplex at 3 p.m. It'll be community meet and greet, autographs and pictures with the Grey Cup. January 7th, Prince Albert, Parkland Ambulance and Emergency Services, closed to the public, as will be Arthur Peachey School, King George School, Prince Albert Firehouse, Northern Lights Casino, but then at 5:30 there'll be a Raiders hockey game at 5:30. Players will be available for autographs during the intermission. The Cup will be on display and available for photos all game long. And the players that will be taking part, you'll all be very pleased to know, headlining will be Corey Sheets, Paul Woldu, Terrell Mays, Tristan Jackson, Taj Smith, Xavier Fulton, Dan Clark, Brendan Labatt, John Chick, Neil Hughes, and Mike McCullough. Thanks for your patience, guys. I wanted to get that out, and all of a sudden the mics went dead. We lost connection with the network. I don't know what happened, but whatever, we got over that. So I wanted to talk about, we can talk about what you like. One of the things, though, I'd like to talk about today is looking back and looking ahead at the coaches, GMs, players that had a tough year for whatever reason, and also the players that will be changing, and your opinions on how you think that will all play out, including we can start to talk a little more specifically about the Red Blacks. We have a better idea of the players they have, and we can talk about those players that they have and how you think they'll do in their new environment. Do you want to start? We'll start with Manasseh. And if you have something else you want to start with, you can start with that, and then we'll get into the other thing.
So we're starting with the Red Blacks, or what's
the... Well, no, we can start specifically on... there have been some players, for example, I'll give you an idea of what I'm thinking. We've got a receiver for the Toronto Argonauts who is a punt returner as well. His name is Chad Owens, and I think it... be pretty fair to say that he didn't have a great year. Now, he didn't have a bad year to speak of, but not as good as the year he had, last year. I think he'll do well this year. I think he fought injuries, and I do believe that Chad Owens will come back to his to the level of play that he had in the Grey Cup year for the Argos in 2012. Last year was trouble for him as far as injuries are concerned, and I don't know, And so what do you think of Chad Owens? I bring up his name, and I told you how I feel. Do you guys have any opinion on Chad Owens and how he'll do next year, relative to how he did this past year and the year before? Go ahead, Manasseh. You can go first.
Yeah, no, I think he's still a great player. I think, like you said, he had a lot of injuries. And if anything, I think going forward, especially next year, I think he should just stop doing – any special teams at all. I think he should just be a receiver only from now on, just to extend his career. Because if he keeps up trying to do everything, he's probably just going to play two more years and be done.
especially if I can jump in front of Mike, especially because unfortunately the 2012 year he was a better player than he was prior to that. It is very difficult now that he's got a giant target on his back, his front, everywhere. It's hard for him to do both. And the Argos themselves knew they were ready for the opportunity to pull him away from punt and kick returning. So you're 100% right. I agree with you wholeheartedly that he has to concentrate on being a receiver, and he has to be as physically not tired, right? Because I can't see, he's a human being. I can't see how he doesn't get tired. And I think we all know that that's when injuries happen, when you're tired. You need to be fresh out there, you know, full of oxygen as opposed to gasping it all. And that's not to suggest that he's out of shape. I'm just saying, these guys are running pretty fast and they're working pretty hard, and they're working him pretty hard.
Not to mention also the fact that he's the perfect receiver for their offense, considering they like to get the ball out quickly and get it to the receivers on short passes, and his ability to just make plays after the catch and, you know, buy extra yards with his ability, you know, to shake guys off and stuff. That's really valuable for the Argos. So they need him more than ever as a receiver going forward.
They're it's the same thing with Kackert when he was healthy. It's about making the miss, making a catch, and making the defense miss and getting a few yards extra, maybe even 10, 15. And you're right. I agree with you 100%. And that's what was wrong with the Argos this year. I know Chad Owens had a good year, but he can do better than good. Mike, what do you think?
You know what? I would agree with Manasse. You know, I think Chad Owens need to concentrate strictly on being a wide receiver. This year was really bad for him because, I mean, he had a good season, but he injured. And, you know, too many punt returns, too many kick returns. Being a wide receiver, I mean, it's going to take a toll on your body. You know, last year, I think it was calling Mr. 4000 or something like that. And the year before that was Mr. 4000. After a while, you know, it's going to wear and tear. It's not like he's getting any younger. You know, wear and tear his body. So I strictly agree with Manasseh. Strictly be a wide receiver. Or if you don't want to be the wide receiver, strictly be the punt return and kickoff return man. Either one. But you're going to have to choose which one you want to do. But I say receiver because it works for Toronto's offense for him to be the receiver.
Yeah, and let's face it, he's in the game a lot more as a receiver than he would be as a punt returner only.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He'd have more of an impact on the game. Now, that's not to suggest that from time to time they throw him in there, but I just don't think he could be the full-time guy. They need to give him a chance to recharge on the bench, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's my biggest concern with him. Well, you guys take your turn now. Mike, what player do you think should look forward to next year as a big improvement, you know, like let's just say the last year was one that they want to forget. What player do you think wants to have a better
Fred
year?
Fred Stamps. Fred Stamps, by far.
By far?
By far. Now, I think with him being the caliber receiver that he is, he needs to have a better season. The Edmonton Eskimos as a team need to have a better season if they want to keep that guy happy and want to keep him on their roster. Because I don't think Fred Stamps can go through another disappointing season being the best wide receiver in the league last year, leading and receiving, and was out three to four games for injuries. I don't think he can go through that again because, like Chad Owens, he's not getting any younger, and he wants to win. I mean, he has proven that he's a winner since he's been with Edmonton. I mean, they need to cash in on trying to find something or some type of offense to get them some wins for that guy.
Manasseh?
Yeah, I think if it's a guy that was really off the radar last year, for me it would have to be Siobhan Walker with the Red Blacks. I think we all saw 2 years ago the big playability he had, and both as a runner and making plays in the short, you know, if you give him a pass in the flat. But considering when you look at the rest of their team, he's going to be pretty much their entire offense from what I can see. I'd imagine they're going to use him the same way the Riders use Corey Sheets. And, you know, even if they don't run the ball with him, just getting the ball, you know, on screens and, you know, short passes and let him just use his speed and agility to, you know, create yards. So I think he's going to have a pretty huge year. I'd expect at least, he might even have 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving.
They
I agree.
You know, they've got a pretty good, when you consider it, you know, where they're starting, they've got a pretty good offensive line. I mean, when you consider they've only got 25% of the players that they're going to have in camp. When you think of that, when you look at it that in that perspective, they've got a pretty good offensive line. I mean, the draft was pretty good to them, actually both lines, the defense and the offensive line. They've got a pretty good start, don't they? And that would be great for him, for Siobhan, right?
Yeah, that's why, you know, when you look at them, honestly, they have a shot at being competitive. I mean, like you said, when you win the trenches and you build up in the trenches, you set yourself up for success because those guys always make skilled players look good. And it's all going to come down to Kevin Glenn. You know, if we get the Kevin Glenn we've been seeing the last 2 years in Calgary, they'll have a chance. But if he looks like the guy we saw in Hamilton and was really inconsistent and up and down, they're probably going to be fourth in the East.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I think we can agree that this year for them is just a year to establish what they're made of. You know, they're gonna set a point where, you know, a reference point for the team. I mean, you can't even as the team. I don't think the team is gonna build up how well they're gonna do that much because they don't want to set the bar too high. You know, because you don't want to start the impatience with the fans, right?
No, you don't. That's why this year, first year for the Ottawa Redblacks, there's no pressure on anybody. The coach, the Kevin Glenn, any of the players, it's not really a pressure. They just want to get out there, set a stamp on how they're going to run their offense, their defense, get the team organized right, get all the right players in for their first year. And then for next year, that's when they're going to really try to put a stamp on getting more free agents, more players to go along with what they have. And, you know, I agree with Manasse. I think they'll be fourth in the East because they're not going to be a team that you're just going to run over and think you're going to beat night in, night out next year. It's not going to happen.
I suspect that that next year, you know, when you talk about fourth, yeah, but I could see them – you know, not necessarily finishing third, but being close. I could see them doing that because there is some rebuilding going on in the Eastern Division. You know, Hamilton by far is ahead of the game with everyone. I don't think they were accidentally in the Grey Cup. It wasn't an accident. The Argos have some fence mending to do. And having said that, we all know that Montreal is, you know, they're going to be better than they were this year. But having said that, you know, it's going to be a dogfight. Like, a game's going to be a big difference because it's not going to be like, I don't think you're going to have Hamilton jumping like 14-4. But I think the division's going to be one of those ones where the winner is going to be close, just above 500, and the loser's just going to, the fourth place team's going to be just below. I think it's going to be a real tight race. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, this is the best the Eastern Division has been in probably, I'd say, almost a decade, honestly. It's the first time
especially with interest.
Look at it. Yeah, I mean, without question.
With interest.
I mean, yeah, you know, the Montreal is the team, to me, is just the big wild card. You know, when you look at them, Troy Smith, he really, his potential is so, you know, so huge, and the spectrum of where they could end up is just ridiculous. I mean, if he has a big year, I wouldn't be shocked if Montreal ends up number one, considering that they have a top rank. They have the best defense in the East, like by a long shot. It's not even close. And all they need is a consistent performance at quarterback, and if they can get that, along with the return of Brandon Whitaker at running back, I mean, that team has the chance to really take over and dominate. And the other thing with Hamilton, like you said, with their new stadium, Hamilton should have a great home record, which they didn't have last year. You know, they struggled early on in Guelph, but I think next year, back in the new Tim Hortons Field, I could see them winning, you know, eight, even if not all nine games at home. And if they can go and pull off three or four more games on the road, that could pretty much clinch first place for them, you know. The team I'm most worried about is Toronto. And I just, you know, they're starting to lose guys, and their offensive line is still kind of questionable right now. We're not really sure who's going to start. And but as long as they got Ray, as you well know, they're going to have a chance to compete, so we'll see.
And they're going to have a new, you know, defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you like Tim Burke? Like, do you feel like
well,
he's a good fit?
I like Tim Burke because I think he's more compatible with Milanovic. Milanovic is a player coach.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty fair statement to suggest that Christopher Jones, not our Christopher Jones, but the one that Chris Jones, he's not a player coach. He's a very heavy-handed guy, right?
Yeah.
And
well, I'm
just
worried because of his system. You know, like his system worked in Winnipeg and in Montreal when he was there before because he had, you know, he could get that consistent pressure with his defensive line without having to blitz anyone. You know, if you noticed in Montreal, he used to have Anwar Stewart and forgot number seven. What's number seven's name? Their defensive end. The guy they have right now.
Oh, geez, I don't remember either.
Yeah, but anyway, he had two great defensive ends, and then in Winnipeg, as you remember, the year they had the whole Swaggerville thing, he had Odell Willis, Alex Hall, and they were rotating with Jason Vega and Kenny Mayne, and those guys are tremendous coming off the edge. And with those guys, he was able to get pressure without ever having a blitz, which allowed him to drop back his DBs and play coverage, and he was really successful. The problem is in Toronto, they don't have any defensive ends whatsoever. I mean, really, their defensive line is Khalif Mitchell, and I don't think any of us can name another defensive lineman they have. I mean, it's that bad.
I know I can, and that's the first thing I was thinking was Khalif Mitchell. That's
right.
It.
Yeah, I mean, they're depending on a young, you know, Cleon Lang. He showed a little bit of promise, but it's still too early to tell. And the other thing, the other problem, too, is their linebackers are not, you know, I don't know if McCune's going to still play at a high level. We know what they have in Marcus Ball, but they still haven't replaced Brandon Isaac, and that position all year last year was a rotating, just different guys stepping in and out, and they have way too many question marks on their defense for me to even think Burke is even going to be a factor at this point, because coaches are only as good as the players they have, and he had a ton of studs in Winnipeg. I mean, I know they had a bad reputation for their offense, but their defense was full of all kind of playmakers, especially in their secondary. And he's not going to have that in Toronto, so I don't know how successful he can really be.
Well, you know, there's no doubt, even if they had every player from last year, once you get a different coach in, he's going to bring his own people. So almost in a way, guys, I think, I'm not saying that he's happy that, like what you said, there aren't enough household names on the defense. I think that works to his advantage because I really do believe that coaches have their kind of players and they want to bring in their kind of players. And I think this is a good time for him to come in because he's going to get a chance to put his name on this team, you know, to put his stamp on this defense. And what I like about him is that he's like a Milanovic. You know, I admired, and you know we talked about this while the season was on. Tim Burke is a class act. I didn't see him, you know, I'm not saying you didn't see him angry, because you could see he could have blown the hat off his head a few times. But he never took it out on a player from what I saw. I don't know, what do you guys think? I mean, don't you think that's more like a Milanovic style and there won't be a difference? You know, there won't be, how come that teacher's treating his class that way and our teacher's treating us like this situation?
Yeah, he was pretty rough in Winnipeg. I mean, you remember when Paul LaPlice got fired the year before? It was right before the game, the Labor Day game against Saskatchewan.
That's
and
right.
A lot of the players had got somewhat excited. They thought he was going to come in and be more of a player-friendly coach. But he stepped in, and unlike the difference between him and Jones, is Jones is just a loud guy that gets amped up and gets in players' faces. But Tim Burke is the same. He's the same heavy-handed guy, just not as vocal. And what he did to the Bombers, the first week he got in is he stopped practice and had the guys run suicides and wind sprints the entire practice for like three straight days.
Wow.
And it really angered a lot of the players. And if you remember that next game, at Saskatchewan, they lost 52-0. And, you know, so, and he had because I followed a lot of what happened in Winnipeg. He pretty much lost the team in the beginning of the year. You know, he's not a great motivational speaker. He's a very, very heavy-handed disciplinarian. He's a lot like Tom Coughlin. He's really strict. You know, if you're 5 minutes early to a meeting, you're late. So that kind of wears thin on guys after a while. You know, I know Jones had a sort of that same problem of sort of wearing thin on his players, but at least he's a guy that would try to motivate his guys, get them amped up, encourage them, you know, try to get, you know, get them excited, whereas Burke would just likes to grind his players into the dust. And that's why none of the players revolve. I mean, you guys may think it might work, but for my opinion, honestly, I don't know if it's going to work that well. I could see
they did win a great cup together with Milanovic running the offense.
Yeah, again, you got to dissect that, right? I mean, did they win the Grey Cup because their defense was great, or did they win those Grey Cups because they had one of the best offenses in the history of the CFL? You know?
Most of it, I'm going to agree with you, was offense. But, you know, I'm a firm believer also that what I remember of the Alouettes back then when those guys were there, their defense always came up with a key play. You know, as far as I'm concerned, they had a pretty good defense, and it didn't hurt. Their defense didn't hurt them. That's what happened this year, right? And I say, I mean, the Argo defense was pathetic this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, for me, I wouldn't read that much into Montreal's defense at that time. If you remember those games, the Alouettes were always, usually they were up by two scores by halftime, almost always. So at that point, the opposing offense had to just throw the ball on pretty much every down. And for any defense, even if it's a bad defense, if you know the team has to pass on every play, it's not that difficult to defend that. You know, it's only when you have that threat of a run and pass, or they can do different things, that's when they catch you off your toes, and that's when a bad defense gets exposed. But, you know, I don't know, man. I know you guys are just hoping that it works out, but just from my perspective, I'm just being honest. And when you look at everything, I don't know what Toronto's going to do next year. I really don't.
You know what?
Hamilton,
I'm not 100% sure that that's the case, but we'll see. I got some people are having trouble listening in. Let me see here. I don't know what the heck's going on. They say they can't hear the show. That's not very good. And he says he can't get it here. I'll try something for him. Let's do this. So let me see if I can help these guys get hear the show. Whoopsies. Copy. Let's try this. Sorry, guys. Okay. Well, anyway, yeah, you can keep talking. I was just trying something to see if I could make it work and figure out why it isn't working.
Okay. Well, you know, my perspective, I agree with Manasseh as far as the Tim Burke thing. I don't know how that's going to work in Toronto. And like you said, and I followed the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for a little bit, and I agree with him. You know, when he made them players do them sprints, a lot of them players fell out of favor with him, man. You know, they started ignoring him, you know, at the beginning of the season. And when you lose your players like that at the beginning of the season and you still got, 14, 13, 12, 11 games to go, I mean, that's a long season for your players to fall out of favor with you, you know, and trying to win them back is real hard after you lose favor. So, you know, I don't know. I just hope that he don't lose the players the way he did in Winnipeg and Toronto, because it would be real catastrophic if he did.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't argue with you anymore, that's for sure. The Argos right now are in a position basically that isn't the best. You know, they won a Grey Cup, you know, that, which puts a big target on them. The team that they hate the most and that hates them the most is now basically the favorite, right? In my opinion, you know, and I think it's going to be tough for them.
I mean, just, you know, look at all the guys they've lost. I mean, not to mention the fact that Dontrelle Inman is gone. You know, if you look at their offense, look who they're depending on now. You got Andre Dury, Chad Kacker, Chad Owens, right? Three great players, three probably some of the best players in the league we all agree on. But they're all starting to become kind of injury prone. And it's sort of a scary thing where the three guys that your offense is probably going to count on the most, there's no guarantee they're going to play the whole season, if not even half at this point. You know, and
right.
I don't know.
And at least they still got Jason Barnes as a number two to complete complement Chad Owens.
Yeah.
You know. But they're going to need some more help.
Yeah, Barkley's definitely got his work cut out for him. Yeah, he's got to get some depth this offseason. He's got to, whether it's getting some young guys or maybe even, you know, doing what he hates, which is paying a little extra in free agency. But he's got to do something to try to replace some of the guys they've lost.
Especially if they want to get back to the Grey Cup. Especially.
Yeah.
Yeah, and getting back to the Grey Cup is going to be a battle because, quite frankly, Hamilton's doing better, and I think last year, if nothing else, and Pop stays as the head coach, they're not going to have, and I'm talking about Montreal, they're not going to have a bad five or six first games.
Yeah.
You know? And I happen to think that even when you consider those teams are going to divide wins, let's say, I just happen to think that the difference between, like I said, the top and the bottom next year is going to be interesting because I happen to think that those three teams are pretty even, and I don't think Ottawa's that far behind.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when you look at how the East played out the last 3 years where, you know, you had Montreal was the lead, right? And then Toronto built themselves to beat Montreal, if you notice. And then after that, Hamilton built themselves to beat Toronto last year. So, you know, it's going to be, in a way, I guess, for Toronto and Montreal, they're both going to have to sort of revamp their teams, built to try to stop Hamilton now, because Hamilton looks like they're the new, you know, top dog in the East. So it's that interesting if you notice that dynamic. So right now, Toronto's got Montreal's number every time they play. Hamilton's
right.
got Toronto's number. And Montreal's got Hamilton's number. So it's sort of a weird, if you notice, how the East has sort of played out.
Yeah, and you know, it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing, you know.
Yeah,
because
it's
the one thing about the Eastern Division,
the
right? Yeah, and the one thing about the Eastern Division is, the team that goes in there, you know, and we all understand, we have, it's tough. You know, to say the least, it's tough the way it is right now. You know, the way the Eastern Division is. It's the best it's been, like you said, Manasseh, in a while. But there really isn't. I really don't think we can really call. Since the Alouettes, there's not really been even the Argos this past year. You know, weren't that dominant. You know, they had great runs, but not the kind of dominance that the Montreal Alouettes had. You know, we still, you know, when the Argos won the Grey Cup, they weren't first, you know. So I'm not 100% sure that this year there'll be a real dominant team. If it isn't Hamilton, that's for sure. You're in here, buddy, and I'm referring to Bruce John Inch. Welcome to the program.
Oski wee wee boys, Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
John.
We're having trouble with the network, I understand.
Yeah, I tried all the links, man. Nothing was coming up. It was saying, Sue, we're not down. I just saw another gentleman post underneath mine said the same thing. So,
well, what I was going to post is, and I'll post it on, if they want to listen to the show, just give me your phone number and I'll call you, because I can put as many as 50 people in the room. So, anybody who's in a hurry to listen will be able to.
Awesome. Awesome. So what's new and exciting?
Well, the topic today is real simple. What player, coach, GM do you think is looking forward to next year, either to remove a bad experience last year or, you know, finds themselves in a new situation? The obvious, of course, is the Red Blacks. But are there any teams, coaches, players that you believe are looking forward to a good year? A better year?
Oh, I'd have to say Kent Austin, you know. I'm going to stick with him. He wants to win that Grey Cup, right? So I think, you know, it goes for any coach. I think every coach comes in with the same mindset. you know, get to the Grey Cup, and that's all that matters, man, is that one game. All these other 18 games and the two preseason games mean shit, out, you know, when it comes down to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know. So you believe that Hamilton will be dominant next year, or is it going to be another nip-and-tuck year for first place in the Eastern Division?
I think it's going to be nip-tuck, whatever. It's going to be close, right, because, you know, this is a very close Eastern rivalry we've got, you know, even with Toronto, now Ottawa coming in, Winnipeg. I think it will be close, but, I got all the faith in my Ticats that we'll be there at the end.
Well,
and the main thing is we beat the Argonauts, right?
Yeah, I know. I'm going to have to listen. I can't wait till the season starts so I can stop hearing it.
Well, we'll see. I'm glad you have confidence. That's what you need, bud.
Hey,
absolutely.
It's awesome. It is great that Ottawa's back in the division, and we actually have...
I can't wait to go down to Ottawa and watch the game.
I'm just waiting for the
schedule to come out, and we'll get our tickets when they come on sale to the general public and go from there. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to going down.
Four Eastern teams that find themselves in the east of Canada.
How poetic. Exactly.
I don't have anything against Winnipeg. I think Winnipeg's great, but it belongs in the west.
I believe so, too. That's right. Maybe they'll send them out in the west when we get a team in New Brunswick or Quebec, I think.
They are out west, Bruce.
Winnipeg's out west
in the Western Division. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They will have five teams. In the Eastern Division, we will have four.
Okay.
I don't think they have a fourth team. I don't think either Winnipeg or Edmonton. I shouldn't say this because I was pulling for Edmonton so much this year. We still have to concern ourselves here in the Eastern Division, guys, while we talk about the Eastern Division, with Winnipeg or Edmonton improving enough to be better than, you know, one of those three teams that we think are you know, pretty even, they being Montreal, Toronto, and Hamilton. You know, can two of those teams, because we know the other three, you think they're safe, guys? You think the other three are safe?
Saskatchewan and BC, yeah. You know.
What about Calgary?
Calgary's got to come up with a new quarterback and all that now, so they're going to be a whole different team.
Yeah. Yeah, but as far as Calgary, bro, as far as Calgary is concerned, I don't think they're going to skip a beat that much. It's going to be kind of different with Kevin Glenn not being the starter, but if you're going to go with Bo Levi Mitchell, they're not going to drop down tremendously. It's going to be a step down, but it's not going to be as bad as what a lot of fans might think it's going to be, because they're going to still have a high-powered offense. They still got the good receivers. They still got John Cornish. And, I mean, Bo Levi Mitchell, I mean, he has proven that he can win games. So they're not going to be as bad off as what people might think they're going to be.
Right.
I'm inclined to agree with you. I think it's pretty safe that the same three teams will be in the Eastern Division playoffs. Sorry, Western Division playoffs. My issue is between the other four, you know, if Toronto, Hamilton, I don't think Hamilton, I think it's going to be either Toronto or Montreal. Toronto or Montreal, if they don't have a good year and can't beat the expansion Ottawa team, because, you know, sometimes what happens is teams that shouldn't win do. It could cripple their chances of making the playoffs, because I happen to think that Edmonton with Chris Jones right now, he's going to be an asset there because, quite frankly, that team was lacking discipline, and that was one of the biggest problems they had. And the advantage that they have with Chris Jones is he's very disciplined.
Yeah.
So,
right.
So, you know, they could improve enough. You know, and let's not forget, the year the Argos won the Grey Cup, they played in the Eastern semifinal with Edmonton.
Right. Yeah. If you look,
and they didn't have
East,
Ricky Ray that year either.
Yeah. The the East is pretty much, you know, like you said, Toronto and Hamilton, I think, are locked in for the top two seeds, and it just comes down to Montreal at third. And Montreal's defense is just too solid for them not to make the playoffs, I think. And
I, you know, Manasseh, I disagree. I think the Argos are the ones that are most in danger.
Really? You think they're going to?
Yeah,
they're the ones that are most in danger.
Oh, absolutely. I love my team, but we're talking reality here now. This is not wishful thinking we're talking here. We're talking, I'm here talking to you honestly. I think the Argos have to, their defense has to improve. You know, last year, they had a tough finish to the year. I don't want to say they stumbled into first place, but they didn't run into first place.
Right. That's why it matters, you know, what type of schedule comes out. That's what I'm trying to see.
Yeah.
If the CFL is going to have an unbalanced schedule so teams play in their division more often. And if they do, Toronto should be in great position because Toronto is going to dominate Montreal. They're going to dominate Ottawa, and they're going to pick off a ton of wins off those two teams. And they're probably going to split with Hamilton, or even if it goes 2-1 Hamilton, they should still be in good position to take over second. But if the CFL has a goes back to the whole thing where everybody plays each other twice, then the whole entire Eastern Division is in huge trouble because they're going to get absolutely wiped out whenever they go out west, and it's just going to throw things off. But if it's
I don't know if they'll be wiped out, Manasseh, but they will be hard pressed, you know, to win as many as they lose in the West. I agree with you that they won't win as many as they lose. I agree with you,
right.
But I don't think it'll be that. I don't think that's the word I'd use. But yeah, I agree with you. It's going to be, wiped out. No, I don't think so. But I do think they're going to have difficulty when they go out west if they go equally, because then if they go equally, then they're dealing with Edmonton and Winnipeg head to head.
Right.
For that last playoff spot.
If it does get an unbalanced schedule, though, I'm calling it right now. I think Hamilton's going to be 15-3. I really do.
I think that's an unbalanced schedule. In other words, play most of their games in the East?
Yeah, exactly. You play your division opponents more often. I think if that's the case, Hamilton is guaranteed going to be not only the number one team in the East, they may end up with the best record overall. Just because the Western teams are going to beat each other up so much, one in the West is going to pull away.
Absolutely.
Right, yep.
But I don't think, I truly, you know, don't forget, they'll have two softies rather than one next year. They'll have Winnipeg and Edmonton who are trying to get up off the ground, right?
Yeah. But in Hamilton's eyes, from Hamilton's perspective, Ottawa's a pushover. They know they can beat Toronto. They got Toronto's number. And Montreal is really the only threat to Hamilton. So I think Hamilton, they could dominate the East, and they could just rack up all their wins against the Eastern teams.
Mike, what about you? You want to throw in a couple of gems or what?
Well, I agree. If it's an unbalanced schedule, like Manasseh was saying, Hamilton is going to come out with the top spot. But when all these Eastern teams go out west, man, they're going to get beat real bad. So you know, I'm just looking forward to the season, man. Of all, you know what I'm saying? I hope Hamilton come out with the top spot, but I also want the Red Blacks to be in contention when it comes to the Grey Cup this coming up year.
Well,
I know that a lot of teams think they're going to be some pushovers, but it's not going to be like that. Ottawa is going to surprise a lot of teams this year. And a team that's supposed to come in and think they just can run over them, like BC, Saskatchewan. Ottawa is going to surprise a lot of them Western Conference teams.
How many games they're going to win, Mike, honestly?
What you say, Manasseh?
Yeah, so how many games do you think Ottawa's going to win, like, really?
They're going to go maybe 9-9.
Wow.
Yeah, I think so, too.
That's amazing. Okay. Really, 9-9?
Uh-huh. 9-9.
Wow. If they pull that off, then their GM and coach should get, like, they should make them the highest-paid guys in the league if they pull that off. I don't think there's any way they win more than 5 games. That's a miracle if they pull off 9.
It also, again, let's go back to Manasseh's point, depends what kind of schedule they have.
I think either way they're in trouble. I mean, really, it doesn't even matter at this point. I mean, if they play the East, West, they're the worst team in the league. Like, it's not even, I mean, who would you look at on paper other than maybe Winnipeg if you were to pick in any game that you would pick Ottawa to win, honestly?
I pick them to win Winnipeg. Well, I'm not going to really say pick them to win Winnipeg because we don't know what they're going to look like upcoming season, but I say Winnipeg, Edmonton. I see a split between the BC Lions and Saskatchewan Roughriders.
A split?
I mean, because you got to think. I see a split. They'll win one. They'll win one out there. They'll lose one in the West, and they win one at their home games. I mean, the guys that they have on their roster right now is not slouches. They got some people, man, that can help them help their team win. And that's why I say, man, I see them going 9-9. They're not going to be runovers, pushovers like a lot of teams think they're going to do. They're going to come in out of one this and then just demolish them and then go back home. It's not going to be like that. You got one of the best quarterbacks – best quarterbacks in the league that can go ahead and clock management, and I mean one of the best completion ratios in the league. I mean Kevin Glenn is not turnover prone, and a couple more pieces, get a couple more defensive backs to come in there to help that young defense, they'd be all right.
But think about it, like look who's their offensive coordinator. They brought in an offensive line coach. You know, if Christopher Jones was here right now, and you know what he always says about our defensive culture struggle. When you combine the fact that they got a defensive head coach and that their offensive coordinator was an offensive line coach, I'm sorry, I think every team in the league is going to circle the calendar for every game against Ottawa. Because to me, that's an automatic win. It would be like any team that loses to Ottawa, it's just going to be a case where either they had too many injuries or they just didn't come into the game with enough focus. I mean, they're going to be so bad on offense, it's not even funny.
I don't think Rick Campbell's going to run offense, put his own plays in.
Well, he's a defensive coach, you know.
Man,
he was a defensive coordinator last year in Calgary, so I just don't know what they're going to do with their offense. I mean, I don't know how he could hire an offensive line coach to be your offensive coordinator. That's crazy.
You know, it's amazing when people make decisions that seem kind of almost ridiculous, how sometimes they are successful, but usually they don't. Usually you have to go to what's normal. You can't reinvent the wheel.
Right. I mean, and the CFL is an offensive league, and you got Milanovic and Ken Austin, offensive geniuses in your own division. You can't go up against guys who are on that level, that elite level of offensive ability, with an offensive line coach as your offensive coordinator. I mean, come on, that's like playing checkers against guys who are, you know, chess masters. I mean, what are you doing?
We've seen the special teams coach for the Argos become a head coach.
Right, but I mean, even there, he's got Marcel Belfay as his offensive coordinator. So,
head coach
doesn't really matter. I mean, all you got to do as a head coach is just be a good motivational speaker and a good leader. But
you're right in the sense that he has a lot of coaching experience on the staff.
I mean, he has a proven offensive coach. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, no, you're right. You're right. You know, no, you're right.
I don't know what Ottawa was thinking. I don't understand what their mindset going into that was. You know, if you get a defensive coach, you have to get an offensive guy with him on his staff. But they didn't do it. I think Rick Campbell just got guys that were his friends. That's what it looks like when you look at their staff. I mean, I don't know what they were doing.
I think more he trusts than friends.
Yeah,
you know,
but I mean,
I think he went more for trust than friends. But neither of us knows if we're right or not, because I can't get inside his head. I don't know about you. I don't know that I know exactly what he was thinking.
What was his contract deal? Was he signed for 3 or 4 years, or was it just a couple of year deal?
Yeah, I think it's 3 years with an option. The team has an option on his fourth year.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't look at him as long term. Because if they have a lose in 2 seasons, he'd be going after the second season.
That must be what they're thinking too. I bet. I don't know why they didn't hire Paul LaPolice. Even if they didn't hire him as a head coach, they had to get him as an offensive coordinator. I mean, that's.
I guess he wanted.
But you know what, though?
I think that TSN deal was
kind of a sweet deal that he couldn't just pass up, you know, because he might have got a nice little chunk of change to stay at TSN.
Well, right. Mike, that's, you can use your theory, the same theory that you apply for saying that an NFL player will come for a little bit less money, you know, because he wants to play. The same could be said for Paul LaPolice. He'll take a little less money than a coach, but it's a pretty, you know, you're not going to get fired halfway through the season, especially when you've already been there a year.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But then again, too, he might not be ready to come out of the coaching ranks just yet. He maybe want to spend more time with his family. Who knows? But I do see him coming out being a coach maybe after the 2014 season.
Well, he has one more year left on the contract that he signed, right?
Oh, okay. Yep.
And how does that work? Like, when he gets fired, you know, it's one thing when you get rid of a player, but I'm not sure they can do the same thing with a coach, right? You fire him, you still owe him the money, no?
Yeah, they have to pay him until... Unless he takes another job as a coach, then they don't have
right.
to pay him. But as long as he's
so even
court,
even if TSN only pays him, you know, what would normally be considered, you know, not much, but it's not
right.
much on top of a, you know, a coach's salary, and he gets
right.
the guarantee. Because as soon as he signs with another team, that contract now becomes null and void, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're right.
Right.
I mean, he's getting like $250K from Winnipeg.
He can double dip this way, right?
Year.
He can double
right.
dip.
So you said.
So why would he leave?
Right.
Yeah.
Getting all that bread. Getting all that money.
Why not hang around? All right. So we've discussed kind of the Red Blacks. What about some other players? Do you think, you know, do you know anything about the injury that Cackert has? I understand that that's a pretty tough injury.
Was it the ankle or what did he?
Yeah,
he,
and he's got a lot of steel in there. I mean, he's gonna attract a lot of magnets wherever he walks.
Yeah,
he's gonna have a lot of steel in there. Do you think the Argos have to go for another running back and not hold up? Like, you know, just basically hope. I mean, I don't think they have the guy now that they need. I'm happy with the guys they had, but none of them really grabbed, you know, the job.
Well, I mean, I think Norwood did a solid job as a pass blocker, and that's ultimately what Milanovic wants, right?
Mm-hmm, but he's got to catch the ball and make guys miss.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I think they're going to bring in maybe a couple tryouts to see what they can find, that diamond in the rough.
Yeah, because they can't...
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry about that. I was just going to say, I hope they bring Gerald Riggs back. I thought Riggs was great, and then back on the from the Grey Cup year.
Yeah. Well, Riggs was a great counterpunch. You know, he's that acrobat guy. You know that Cackert wasn't.
Right.
You know, Gerald Riggs could have been in the same position that. That quarterback they have, sorry, that running back they have in Hamilton, C.J. Gable,
mm-hmm.
if given the same kind of chance.
Yeah.
Riggs was a pretty, you know, tricky runner.
Plus, he was a pretty big guy, too, which helped in, you know, pass blocking, which is ultimately, you know, if you can't do that, Milanovic is not going to let you start. You know, it doesn't matter how good of a running back you are.
Milanovic is a one running back coach.
Yep.
He's the short pass guy. Even though it's almost like he has three running backs, you know, between Owens, Dury, and Cackert when things are going well, because they just pass the ball 5 yards in and hope the guys can grab an extra 10, 15 yards.
Yeah.
You know, Dury was durable. Cackert not so much, and Owens not so much. So when you think about it, you know, listening to you guys and thinking about the season and thinking about the players, you know, it's really important that the players you count on produce. You know, Winnipeg needs a quarterback that can produce. Are they going to
find one?
Are they going to find
one? Yeah, they're going to find one.
Has anybody heard anything new about Zach Kolaros at all?
It's still January. It's hard to say. It's 14. You know, it's 2014, and you know, a month from now, there'll be a lot of information or whispers going around, because then free agency will begin in February, as well as your interest in the schedule. So it should be a really interesting end of January. For the next couple of weeks, it'll be players brought in, you know, from tryout camps and stuff, right? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Anybody they find that they feel, you know, they want to bring in to have a look. But the real interesting moves are going to be the signing of experienced CFL players, which are free agents.
Yeah.
Right?
So, well, what do you think of the scenario that Christopher Jones put out there about Caleros ending up in Hamilton and then Burris going to Winnipeg?
Do you really think that Burris wants to go into the Western Division?
I mean, I'm just saying, if Ken Austin doesn't take him back, that's the only other spot left that needs a starting quarterback, right?
Yes, sir.
And if you're, you know, do you if you're think Zach,
that, do you yeah. think that, do you think that, that his days are numbered? And do you think that they won't offer him a contract, or they won't offer him a contract that he deserves? Like, there's a lot of ways to get rid of a guy, right? You can make it look, they can make it look like they want him, but they might offer something that in his mind is insulting. We've seen that a million times, you know, where players are offered
right.
contracts that they are, that the team knows they're going to reject. So they
right.
can get
but
rid
you
of
know
a
what?
Lot of ways.
I think Hamilton actually is trying to see what Zach Caleros is going to do first before they offer
right.
Henry Burris a contract.
Do you really think they're going to go
smart.
After him hard?
You know what? I mean, if you think about the two they have, I mean, if Kent Austin want to get the keys to the Bentley to Jeremiah Mazzoli, then he might as well just go ahead and give it to him now. But we see he ain't just did that. He ain't say who his starter going to be next year, because they can't really say who's going to be it. But if you got a chance to get Zach Caleros, then Mazzoli's going to be your backup, and then Lefevre is going to be where he's going to be at. But
right.
I think Hamilton is trying to wait to see what Caleros is going to do and where he's going to sign first, or who offer him the more money to come there. And I think if Winnipeg offer him maybe $225K, I think Hamilton might try to match that by a couple more bucks. And if they can pull it off, they're going to do it. I mean, that's just a smart option, just to wait.
We have another listener in, Mike.
Christopher's here.
Okay.
Oh, look who's here. He's here
Jones.
For the back half. Do I have to make the show start at 10 o'clock on Fridays to get you on here on time, or what?
No, I was just chatting with somebody on my text messaging, and I
no, because I'll change
track
Friday.
Friday
at 10 o'clock
I've
is fine. It's Monday that's a problem.
I've been killing time here, on here. So no, we're fine.
Okay, good. So we've been talking about pick a player, a coach, a GM, a team that's looking forward to this next season and can't wait for it to start because they want to get the taste of last year out of their mouth. Is there anybody in particular that jumps up to the top of the list for you, Christopher?
Well, I want to know what Mike was talking about here. Was that a discussion about Caleros?
Yeah, we were repeating what you said. It started with Manasseh was saying that he agreed with what you were saying, and that was that Caleros would find his way to Hamilton. And the question rose, where would Burris go? Winnipeg?
Well, Burris can go to Winnipeg. Burris, I think Ottawa's out of the question now for him. With Kevin Glenn there, I think that would just be a little bit too much unless that's the only team that needs a quarterback right now is Winnipeg. Burris has to go to Winnipeg.
That's exactly what the boys said, and they agree with that statement. And, yeah, it's the only door open for him if the one in Hamilton closes.
Yeah. Is Manasseh on tonight?
Yep.
Awesome. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you.
It's an impressionist. It really isn't Manasseh. Just
okay.
kidding. Go ahead. Manasseh, I'm having fun with Christopher. Okay, Chris, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Is he there?
Chris? No, he's playing a yoke on me.
That's weird.
Christopher, are you there?
Guys, my wireless cordless headset ran out of battery, so I had to plug it in real fast. So
no worries.
Still here.
Okay, continue
I'm
what you're saying.
I'm not convinced that Kolaris is going to go to Hamilton, although I believe that that is the absolute best place for him. I think there are two other teams that would be interested in him at this point in time, and both of them have good quarterbacks. And they would be BC and Calgary.
Oh.
Well, he did have some success in the West, you know. He did play well against the Western teams. That can't be lost on those guys, right?
Wait, so...
No, it's not. And you're looking at Lule, who has just had his third surgery on his throwing shoulder. And Wally Buono is not a stupid man. He knows that this is, you know, going to be a bit of a push for him to come back from this. And if he does, for how long? And Hufnagel is still not convinced about Bo Levi Mitchell, because he didn't play him that much in the end of the season, and it wasn't because he didn't want people to take a look at him unless he was protecting Tate. We don't know which one he did protect. He could have been protecting Tate and keeping Mitchell on the shelf so nobody really had a good look at him other than what he's already seen.
Well, they could only lose one quarterback anyway. Once Glenn was removed from that lineup, they didn't have to protect it. They could put him on. Whoever wasn't, like what you're saying, I get what you're saying, but I'm being more specific. That would have meant that they would have put the other guy, you know, they would have protected the other guy. Or Glenn was the only one left unprotected. But that's impossible. One of them obviously,
exactly.
Two of the quarterbacks were left unprotected.
Right. So was it Mitchell and Glenn, or was it Tate and Glenn? So we'll never know. But
I think it was Mitchell and Glenn.
Quarterbacking position in that. Was that?
I think it was Mitchell and Glenn.
I think it was too.
Tate's not the answer in Calgary.
No,
okay?
He's not.
Hufnagel's just got too much loyalty there. So, you know, I don't know whether Mitchell's got enough to do it. And not that we think Kolaris is, you know, he's no different position than Mitchell. So I think
but
Calgary
they were helped
would be
out.
In the market
you're,
for
you're
good
right,
quarterback.
Christopher, you're right, Christopher, for one very important reason. Two very important reasons. You mentioned both Calgary and BC. And coincidentally, both those teams lost the quarterback. So there's an opening. I mean, it doesn't it makes a lot of sense what you're saying in my mind, thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, we lost DeMarco. They lost Glenn. Lule is not solid. Tate is not solid. And Mitchell's unproven. So both of those teams need a good second, or at least a number one, if not a really strong second quarterback. And Kolaris may be the answer in that position. I don't know.
Yeah, so,
I think I'd go.
So Kolaris options, you got to like his options. Hamilton, Winnipeg, Calgary, BC.
Ottawa.
Nope. I don't think he's going to go to Ottawa.
I don't think he's going to go to Ottawa either.
It's still there.
Oh,
it's still a possibility.
You know what? You're right. You're right. Yeah, okay, let's say five options. No, four.
So,
Hamilton,
mean,
Ottawa.
Hypothetically speaking.
Calgary, BC.
I've said all along that Austin is going to sign Burris right now before free agency so he doesn't lose him in case he doesn't land Kolaris or land somebody else. Although that's not his number one choice, but he has to tie up Burris as his second, you know, plan B. So
what if I told
right now,
you,
Ottawa
what
has,
if I told you,
yeah.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you because, well, you'd be interested to know this. What if I told you there's some whispers in this city that I live in that Kolaris has already made a pretty hard and fast agreement with Hamilton, short of tampering?
Oh, my gosh.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least.
It wouldn't surprise
me
either.
Barker should just cut him loose because he knows he's not going to keep him. Why wait for free agency?
Well, it's less about cutting someone loose because as it stands right now, he's loose anyway. You know, what you're saying is cut loose any idea of bringing him back.
Yeah. So,
right?
Well, yeah, but, I mean, right now, if Barker released him, he could sign right now with Hamilton tomorrow. Okay?
But the reason that he's not doing that, and because he has one little bit of leverage on his side, which is, and it's the same way as it is in the NBA, where the team that you left that actually retains your rights can actually sign you to a higher max deal than, say, a team in free agency. And so the card that Barker's trying to play, and which he's smart for doing so, is if Caleros wants to go to Hamilton or Winnipeg, whatever it may be, but he wants to sign for the maximum amount of money, then he can tell him, hey, look, I'll sign you to that contract. We'll work out a sign-and-trade. That way both of us get what we want. I get some picks or players, and you get the maximum amount of money you can get. So
there you go.
I think that's what he's trying to play. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right? And I mean, that's exactly what we're – if you're looking at what Austin can do with Burris, which is sign him up right now and then cut him loose after he lands Caleros or somebody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then Ottawa could be doing the same thing right now with Glenn and DeMarco. Glenn may not have been their best choice of quarterbacks. He was just the best choice of what was available.
Yeah, but I kind of think that he's a perfect fit for Ottawa, though, Christopher. I mean, Glenn's
That's you and me, that's you and Mike, too. But you know what? That may not be what they're looking for. They may want Henry Burris. But they couldn't get Henry Burris in the draft, so they grabbed something else in the meantime.
Right.
Okay. I'm not saying that that's what's going to play out, but that's
you know why
you
I agree with you with what you're saying? You know why I agree with what you're saying? Because I love listening to you guys, because you guys always get my head going. You know, Ottawa went after a lot of deep threats in the draft. And Burris would be a better deep threat quarterback than Caleros. I like Burris's arm better than Caleros when it comes to the deep threat.
Yeah, but we lost
Christopher. Yeah, we did too.
Yeah, but I think with Ken Austin, you know, if you look back at his whole career as a coach, both in the CFL and even when he was down in the States, he's always had, you know, a mobile, pretty much scrambling type quarterback. Even though he himself was a pocket QB, he's always worked with, you know, mobile QBs. And that's why you saw him incorporate Lefebvre so much, even with Burris, just because Burris, at his age, he's not a guy that you can consistently have him run the ball, you know, again and again. That's why I think he's probably, you know, really intrigued with Caleros, because even though Masoli can move around, Masoli hasn't been out there and got the type of playing time and experience and went out and proven himself the same way Caleros has. So I think Caleros is the perfect quarterback for Ken Austin.
Yeah, Caleros,
Chris, can you call him?
Yeah, sure. Yep. Tell him to. Well, you know what? I can probably find his phone number in my. I'll see if I can find the phone number. Yeah, I'll call. I like the Caleros business because it really does. You know, it does make things a lot more interesting. And it always goes back to what we always discussed before: is that the great season of, you know, backup quarterbacks. You know, it really did work out good for, you know, for the Argos and for all the other teams that enjoy and fans that enjoy this wonderful thing that is called Canadian football. These young quarterbacks have really made the season and now the off season even interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Because we're not 100% sure of some of those guys that look good. Calero seems to be the guy that we seem to think is the most intriguing for teams, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And like I said earlier in the season, during the season, I was the first one that said I didn't think Zach was going to get it done in Toronto. But a lot of his second half comebacks, you know, that it really impressed me on some of his play. You know, and, you know, I think Zach Caleros is a good quarterback, but it's going to remain to be seen once he gets the starter position full time to see what Zach Caleros is all about.
There you got it.
Not just being a quarterback that came in because your starter is injured and stuff like that. You know, you need to see him on a full-time starter scale to actually to see what type of Zach Caleros that a team is going to get.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we will be back. And let's play something in honor of the Tie Cats.
Welcome to Ivorwin. Who's keeping score? We are. You now informed that this is war. Competition is sushi, but we eat them raw. Hometown threat like Stalin when he see the ball. They love our community and I love their business. Hate helps the O-line and the underprivileged. How can you hate that? My heart goes out to the team. Middle finger to the Argos. Know what I mean? The rumor was our team got dismantled. A few fans ran like Burris on a scramble. I seen some bad seasons and figured I could handle. So even when we down, I'm not turning the channel. I got faith. Our city needs something besides strength to ease the pain. A great cup, a real plan that puts smiles on the faces of everybody up in the stands. I believe in what we doing, fam. Aki wee wee, Aki wawa, holy mackinac. That's my homie, he made the team. So I made the song. Now let's make the dream a reality. Oski, wee-wee to the stadium off balance. We stomp our feet, we chant chug and start wildin'. Linebackers like virgins. Nah, you ain't getting up the middle or throwing down the side. Plus the pass rush will end you. We turn it over, treat it like a rental. You gon' return that shit later. Dear end zone, our D came to defend you. And that mean only our team is getting in you. Playing like it's 99, really that simple. All them strikes earned, so them other teams fear you. The crowd so loud, you can't say we can't hear you. Last game of the season, we coming to cheer you on.
Yes, we do. We come in to cheer you on because you are the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Yeah. Yeah, in honor of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I got to tell you, though, Manasseh's been away for a while. He's had some busy times doing some, you know, celebrating his birthday and stuff. What do you think the Saskatchewan fans, how much they adore their team and they've the team sold $1 million worth of items, I guess, you know, paraphernalia, all kinds of stuff, after the Grey Cup. Is that amazing or what?
Nobody's amazed.
I am.
Are you? Why?
Why?
Well, everybody I see now has these 101st Grey Cup champion T-shirts. They're everywhere.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Wait,
no.
Even in Vancouver, you're seeing them?
Oh, no, I'm seeing them all over the internet.
Oh,
I don't get out much. I live up on a mountain, so, you know, I don't see people.
He sees horses and grapes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but, I mean, everybody out in the internet has got them. And, I mean, like, so why are you surprised that they sold $1 million worth of merchandise? I thought that was kind of low. These guys are crazy.
Really?
They're crazy.
You
think that's low? CFL merchandise is going to go up a lot with a lot of these teams next couple of years. I mean, it's part of the growing of the CFL, really.
You know, I can see Ottawa being number two in the league.
Well, I'm buying Ottawa T-shirts.
You know what
Why
I'm
not?
Saying?
Yeah, I'm supporting their team.
I just don't think there's a lot of merchandise that jumps off the shelves. I'll give you an example with the Argos. This year was the boat logo year, and my wife wanted to buy me the 83 boat logo, the one with the football, the brown football, and she couldn't get me anything.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not because it ran out. It's because they don't produce that much of that stuff. You know,
right.
they don't sell, there's not that much that goes off the shelves. I mean, you go to an Argo game, like Hamilton, okay, I'm going to grant you that Hamilton might be a little bit different, But the fact remains that that's why you see a lot of dated, you know, jerseys. Because people are still wearing the one they bought when the Argos were their favorite team.
Yep.
And then, of course, this year's, right? The new one, right?
Yeah. Speaking of speaking of jerseys, you guys remember those black ones that the BC Lions came out with this year?
Yeah, I got one for Christmas.
Yeah.
Good for,
The CFL announced that basically they're having they're doing a thing next year for all the teams where every team is going to get their own special, you know, third uniform, like a special alternate, kind of like how BC did it, like some kind of new modern style. So they're pretty much saying every team's going to have something crazy come out next year.
Cool.
So the Argos will have one that will be all dark blue and orange.
No, actually, I heard the Argos one is going to be all sky blue with the sky blue helmets. And kind of like, I don't know if you guys noticed in college football now, they have the new helmets. Sometimes they're like shiny and
crazy.
Yeah, they're going to do something
that.
They're going to have something that looks all kind of like the Argos are going to have this weird big A thing with the sky blue helmet with the dark blue A. And I saw there's a couple of pictures online. They're sort of starting to leak some of them.
That'll be okay. John's not big on letters, though.
Yeah.
John doesn't like letters.
The problem that I see with, being in retail for so many years, two things happen to you. If you run out of merchandise and you're sold out, that you're leaving money on the table.
Absolutely.
And if you've got a warehouse full of the shit and you can't move it, then you ordered too much. So it's a very fine line of budgeting, forecasting, and figuring out what's going to happen. But if you run out, man, spend twice the money and get it more produced really fast.
Yeah.
I mean, if the Argos ran out, if you couldn't buy a particular thing, I mean, the BC Lions third jersey has sold out four times since it was introduced in October. Okay? They put out a run and it sold out. They put out a run and it sold out four times. I can't get the one I got for Christmas is the wrong size. I cannot get the right size right now because nobody has
it. The Argos didn't make enough boat logo jerseys, and they didn't replace them when they were sold out.
Yeah,
you know why that is. Like if you look at the numbers, because every team posts their financial reports. Every team in the CFL on average, except with the exception of the Riders, only puts in about $500,000 to $600,000 worth into, like, producing merchandise, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Riders put in about $15 million to produce their merchandise because they then sell about $20 million worth of stuff, right? So it's all about gauging. They can only, if you know you're only going to make X amount of dollars, you know.
But I think Christopher said it 100% right. You have to know what your low and what your high is and make the right amount in between somewhere, right, Christopher?
And then catch up if you screw up.
Yeah. I mean, Chris is right about that. You know, your median, and we're talking about a median now, you know, you're basically saying that $15 million is the median for Saskatchewan, while in Toronto the median is $12.99.
Yeah.
That's what it feels
like.
Sorry
to hear that.
No, I'm just saying, that's what it feels like.
But, you know, it's usually just the case with, like, football gear in general, even with NFL stuff here in America, like, the one sports league that sells the most merchandise is baseball, and it's because of their hats. Like, everybody's got a baseball hat at their city.
Yeah.
You know, everywhere you go. Like, you go around Toronto, I'm sure you see everybody's got a Blue Jays cap just because they represent the
city. Yeah, well, lots of teams. Caps are popular. Caps are popular.
Right.
Turn them around.
I mean, look in Toronto. Look at the Argos. The Argos don't have anything with a T on it. Everything they have is an A. Like, why would people in Toronto walk around with that?
Well, because you know why? Because they got to be careful they've got to be careful because you know what would happen in Toronto? If they use both letters, it would be T and A.
And your problem is?
I'm just saying. I'm not saying it's a problem for me. I'm saying it's a problem for them because they don't want to be selling any T and A. Well, except for the girls on the, you know,
sex sells.
Of course it does. You know, if they did that, you know, thinking about that right now, guys, because I don't know anybody else who ever thought of that, but that, you know, that would be a great selling point. You know, get your T&A here.
Well, you can't do T&A because it's not Toronto and Argonauts. It's you get your TA. And it would transport the same way. You just can't market it as a sexual with that sexual overtone.
So yeah. Yeah.
You can try,
you know,
but I mean,
you just have to be able to market it to the actual city. Like, baseball does a great job of having all their merchandise. It's all about whatever city they're representing. You know, it's either got to be...
so does hockey.
So does hockey.
I mean, and rappers love hockey jerseys.
Well, they used to. That's more of a 90s thing. That's not anymore. Now,
that
sports
goes to show my age.
That sells. Yeah.
So are they doing football jerseys now, or...?
No, that was early 2000s. Now the only sports gear anyone wears or gets is just hats. That's it.
That's
it? It's almost always a baseball hat. Yeah, that's all. Fitted baseball hat.
Yep, that's it.
Yep. That's why, you know, the CFL, sadly, just outside of Saskatchewan, they're the only one that they sell so much because they represent their city. All their gear says Saskatchewan. You don't see that much stuff that says Rough Riders on it. Everything they make, it represents their province and everything. That's why it works so well for the fan.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's wheat, you know.
But I'm saying, though, in general, people like wearing merchandise. They don't necessarily like the team name. They want their city on it. That's why baseball gear sells so well.
But
because
they don't have it.
The
they don't have Regina. Regina's not on their gear.
Yeah, but it's the province.
No, but it's the province.
I know. But
it's more people outside of the inside of the province than there are in the city of Regina, right?
Yeah.
Right. So and across the country, because they always tend to, I mean, talk to a Newfie. They're a Newfie forever. Okay, yeah. It doesn't matter where they live. They're still a Newfie, and they're proud of it.
Right.
And
so,
like,
I mean, once you leave Saskatchewan, you're still Saskatchewan. You're still a Flatlander.
Doesn't matter where
you are.
You know, if the Tiger, I mean, if the Argos decided to change their logo and make it a T for Toronto or do something that represented Toronto, their merchandise sales would go up significantly because then you would start seeing kids around the city wearing, you know, Argo hats because it has a T.
Well,
on
the
it.
Blue Jays did that, right? The Blue Jay hat's a T.
Yeah, that's why their gear sells like crazy. Like almost every Canadian you see on TV or, you know, kids I see here from Canada, they always have a Blue Jays cap because they always represent.
My kid just bought one. We're in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And does it have a T on it? Is the one with the T or the bird?
I think it's the bird, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's still
the new one is the T.
Right, but if you think about it, Frank, we are not trying to assimilate Toronto. People on the West Coast actually don't like the city.
Well, you mean Vancouver or Toronto?
Toronto.
Well, nobody likes Toronto.
No,
big
even
deal.
People
I
in
Toronto,
Toronto don't like Toronto. Have you ever been there? Sorry.
I love Toronto. I love Toronto.
Toronto's a great place.
Yes, sir.
That's why everybody hates it. Not
to be from.
Huh?
It's a great place to be from.
Which city is better, Vancouver or Toronto?
It's a great place to be.
What's that?
One of the greatest cities in the world.
Which city is better between Vancouver and Toronto? Because most people I talk like,
oh, Toronto,
people say Vancouver is a lot more beautiful, and then Toronto is just a bigger city.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Vancouver's picturesque. It's like a postcard.
Right. Aren't they about the same size? Or
Toronto's bigger.
No.
Toronto's much bigger.
Vancouver's about 2 million people.
Oh, okay.
And
then what Toronto's
about that.
How many people in Toronto? 8 million?
No. Both
four. No.
About 3.5.
Oh, okay.
3.5, 4. There's 8 to 10 million in southern Ontario. If you look at it this way, southern Ontario is like the eastern seaboard of the United States.
Right.
Not the same size. I'm just trying to express a theme here, where you know there's it's totally connected. Like from Niagara Falls to Whitby, there is no break. It's full.
Right. So it's sort of like that whole DC, Philly, New York, Boston.
Yeah, but on a smaller scale, no doubt.
Right.
But you know that's the way it is. That's the way it is. That's why it's not picturesque. It's just a monster. You know.
So do you think Southern Ontario is going to get another team? Like I think Mike was saying last
time,
talking about the Windsor. Yeah, like the Windsor area.
It would be great if Windsor got a team. But I don't think. You know, Mike, I like Mike's thinking, because when I think about it, I don't know how Detroit would take to a team that's in Windsor.
Oh, it'd take to a real good. They get a lot of Detroit fans come up. Yeah, you get a lot of Detroit fans that go across the border to see a game, especially being living in Detroit. And honestly, if you ask any Detroiter around here about the CFL, they will tell you about it because it's what a lot of people grew up on around here growing up. Toronto Argos was our favorite team. That was our home team, Toronto Argos.
What happened to the Lions?
It's because the Lions were garbage for like a decade. That was ever the worst team.
Are they any better?
Lions were garbage. But
there was
our
Lions,
famous, when it comes,
one of the most famous books written about football, wasn't it Paper Lion, which made fun of the fact that Detroit was that pathetic?
Yep. And, you know, we supported our Detroit Lions, but when it came to CFL football, Toronto was our home team.
Cool.
Now, was that because of the blue, or was because isn't Hamilton closer to Detroit?
Windsor broadcast the games. You know, back in the day before there was cable, it was all broadcast television, and the CBC in Windsor showed the Argo games.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
They didn't show the Hamilton game. They showed all Toronto games.
Yeah.
And Channel 9, CBC was Channel 9. So, you know, Friday night, Saturday nights, and shoot. Detroiters was tuned into the Argo games. Argo has been a fan favorite of a Detroit man for decades.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how come you don't like him? Aren't you a Ticats fan?
No, he was
actually,
an Argo fan.
Oh, you were?
Yeah,
okay.
I was an Argo fan back in the Rocky Ishmael days and the Ricky Foggy days. And, you know, then I became a BC Lions fan when Casey Prince was out there. Then after BC, I became a Calgary fan, then I became a Ticats fan.
All right. Nice.
And then I just stayed with the Ticats after Kevin Glenn was gone. I just stuck with them.
Wow. Yeah.
But
and
I had
like
my,
their
you
uniform.
Know, my
best,
different...
best uniform in sports.
Who?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Ticats.
When?
No, I think the Argos got nicer uniforms than the Ticats.
No. The Ticats got a better uniform. There's
no,
nothing.
Manasseh,
there's
I agree
no,
with Manasseh
no jersey,
here.
No, there's no jersey. There's no jersey that when you – it doesn't matter. If you don't see the logo, you know it's the Ticats. There's no – you
really?
Look
what
at the Argos, you might think it's the Giants.
No, I think when I see the Ticats, I think Steelers. When I see the Argos,
yeah.
I know it's the Argos.
Yeah.
You think Steelers with
I
the Ticats?
Yeah, the first time I saw Hamilton, I was like, what are these Pittsburgh Steelers ripoffs? The first time – that's the first time – everything – their whole theme is Steeltown, like – they stole the whole Pittsburgh thing.
Wow. Hang on a second now. The Ticats.
Hang on. They had it before Pittsburgh did.
They definitely did.
Yeah.
They really did.
Yeah.
Right.
They were Steeltown long before Pittsburgh ever was.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I thought it was.
And the
Steelers started in the
50s. Pittsburgh. Well, isn't Pittsburgh one of the original teams in the NFL?
Right, exactly. I thought they weren't one of the oldest. I thought they were like one of the first teams they had.
Yeah, because wasn't their owner? Wasn't their owner one of the guys that put the league together?
Yeah,
them and Lou Saban.
Right?
Yep. And it's one thing I want to tell you guys about the Windsor situation. The only reason why Windsor don't have a CFL team because Windsor doesn't have a stadium for them to play in. Don't have a stadium. I think the stadium that they have is maybe like a 5,000-seat stadium.
Yeah,
that's probably the Windsor
Lancers.
That's the college team, the university team.
Yep.
I was seeing online there were some rumors about like potentially the Pontiac Silverdome once it's done getting renovated as a potential spot for a CFL team. I heard he's been working with the commissioner and he's been pushing either to get a team in the Detroit area or a team in Western New York. And apparently the Pontiac Silverdome looks like their best possible site.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I've been reading up on that, too. That's been in the works for a couple of years now.
Right. Because, they don't have a tenant. Like, they don't use it for anything. So,
fact that the American teams will want, like, they'll want to have only American players, which just throws a monkey wrench into the league.
Well,
actually,
think about it.
The CFL has stated that they are not going into America for at least 10 years, if not more.
Man, the CFL can say whatever they want to say, but if somebody brings some money to them and got the money to get a franchise, the CFL going to change just like that.
Yeah.
They're not going to care about what they said before.
The league got really screwed up the last time they expanded, and I'm telling you my opinion. I don't know this for a fact, but from my observation, it was because the American teams had an unfair advantage, which sounds great.
Right.
But it ain't going to work because you're going to piss off the other fans.
Hang on. That's not why the U.S. expansion failed.
Okay, why did it
U.S. fail? Expansion failed because they went into stupid cities that were nowhere near Canada, had no idea about Canadian three-down football, and it failed miserably in Shreveport, in Las Vegas, in Sacramento.
And Memphis.
In Memphis. Okay,
yeah.
Just miserably it failed.
Yep.
Did they have an
That's
unfair advantage? I think they did because Baltimore, I mean, was a dominant team right out of the gate, right?
Right.
But that being said, the salary cap wasn't in play then.
Right, exactly.
So the salary cap now, even with an All-American team, I think the Canadians can compete.
Right.
I don't agree.
They really can. And plus, the thing about it is, it's not like it's going to be last time. They're going to make sure if they put any teams in the States, it's going to be the northern part, the northern teams around the Canadian area, Michigan, Wisconsin, New York, even Connecticut. But, you know, you're not going to put a team in Connecticut because Connecticut just is not a football team. They're going to make sure they have the Canadian imports to come over here and play. They're just not going to make it all American players. You're going to have the work permit is not hard to get like it used to be. You can get a work permit.
Oh, okay.
And Canadians can come over here and play football, do whatever they want to do. So it's going to be a level. It's going to be leveled. They just didn't think about what they were going to do. No problem. They're going to think about what they're going to do before they do it. And that was the problem with the expansion last time. They didn't think before they did it. They just thought about coming to the States and competing with the NFL. Nah, it's going to be a whole together different ball game when they expand this year or whenever they do expand to the States. It's going to be totally different.
And if they do, it's only going to be one team. They're not going to go more than one. Like, it's either going to be a team in Western New York, a team in Michigan, or it's going to be Alaska, one of those three. And it's only going to be one. And if they do, they do have an owner, though. That's the main thing. They have a potential guy in Orlando Gadsden. And I don't know if you guys have good enough memory to remember that far back, but the first touchdown Atlantic, the first one, in the opening, you know, when the game started, it showed the commissioner standing there he had a black guy next to him with glasses, and they was pointing around the stadium and trying to show him the whole stadium. That was Orlando Gadsden, and he was basically trying to convince him, the reports were, to invest into Moncton or invest into the Maritimes and be the next owner out there, but he was saying no. And he's pretty much locked in on either Western New York or in Michigan. So, like to Mike's point, they do have a guy, an owner with money, who's passionate. Orlando Gadsden was a former football player, a guy who knows the game, passionate about it, has the money and wants to invest, and he's totally dead set on trying to make it work in either Michigan or New York. So,
if you put a team out here in Michigan, believe me, the Silverdome, regardless of the Detroit Lions playing downtown, when it comes to a CFL game on a Friday and Saturday night, Silverdome going to be packed.
Right, and especially in the summertime, right, because the only thing they're competing with is the Tigers. And at the end of the day, football always trumps baseball no matter what.
No matter what. No matter what. So,
can the Silverdome have a CFL field in it?
It's so big.
Yeah.
It could be
right now. They're renovating
field.
It right now, so they can easily, you know, fit it for anything.
Okay, because that was one of the big problems with the U.S. expansion in the past was that a lot of the fields didn't play to the CFL game because of the size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. My Silverdome is so big, man. It can be transformed to a CFL field. Heck, it was transformed to a monster truck field for a while. They're using it for monster trucks for a while.
Yeah.
And actually, it was a team that was supposed to play out there called the Michigan Coyotes of the Stars Football League that's based in Florida. Well, the home base for the operations is Grosse Pointe, Michigan. But the league, a lot of their teams were in Florida, so the Michigan team ended up playing their games down in Florida, and then they ended up selling the team for $1 million. So that football league had pulled out of the deal with Pontiac Silverdome.
Wow.
Yep. So that CFL talk about they weren't coming back to the States, that's a bunch of crap, man. You come with the money, and you can pay the application fee, and your bank account is fat enough to support a CFL team, and you want one, whether it's going to be in the States or in Canada, you're going to get it. That money talks.
Right.
Okay. No argument here. I'm just going to, Manasseh, I'm just going to touch base, take a step backwards here for you.
Mm-hmm.
Hamilton Football Organization started in 1883. Pittsburgh Steelers came into effect in 1933. Hamilton was a steel mill in 1833, and Pittsburgh didn't start till 1854.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
Hamilton's got them on both the football and the steel industry.
Wait, so you said the football team started in 1934?
No, the American one.
Oh, that's
1883 was when
50
Hamilton
years.
Got his first team.
50 right. years before the American
Pittsburgh
team.
Didn't get a football team until 1933.
But if you remember, it wasn't the actual Tiger Cats. They were the Wildcats and the...
Oh, there were a lot of different things. It was
right,
an evolution. The Wildcats, the Cats, and then the Tigers, and the Tigers and the
right.
Cats joined and became
two
one team.
Yeah, they,
yes,
well,
I'm not
they,
saying
they merged
that it,
in. They merged in 1937,
yeah.
I believe. Or
yeah.
38.
It's
so they
been
officially
an
weren't the Tiger Cats until the late 30s. So technically you could say the Steelers had them beat. Because
well,
they didn't adopt the black and gold.
I'm just saying the history of football and steel and in Steeltown.
Right.
Hamilton was called Steeltown before Pittsburgh was. We had a football team before Pittsburgh did. Whether it was the same one that we currently have or not, it's an evolution as most teams have come along. I mean, Saskatchewan didn't come out as Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
No.
I mean, they were three or four incarnations or
incarnations
before that.
Yeah.
Incarnations before that.
Right, right.
So,
okay.
I mean, BC Lions have been BC Lions. They're the youngest team in the CFL.
Yeah, didn't
and
they
came in the
60s. Yeah.
1954.
Oh, sorry. Oh, my birthday. Okay. They're
yeah,
60
this is
this year,
the 60th
then.
Anniversary is this year.
Gotcha.
Right? That's our logo right now. It's the 60th anniversary.
That is so cool. And that's why they're getting the Grey Cup then.
That's why it was planned to be here in this year.
Yeah, I got
we
you.
Did not,
if,
we did
if
not have a plan for 11.
Yeah,
2011 was Braley stepping
just
up.
Real quick for your, I just want to say that the BC Lions are the best organization as just in the CFL, like top down. I just got to put that out there. I just thought they're the closest thing to an NFL franchise the CFL has. I know the Riders make a lot of money, but the way the BC Lions, the way they handle their stuff, even their stadium, just the way they operate, I just got to put it out there. I think they're the top notch. Like, I was just, looking at some stuff, and when I saw into a couple of things, it really blew me away how they do things.
That was
guy,
Bobby Ackles.
Yeah.
Well, you know what?
Bobby
and
Ackles
agree
put that into
too.
Play.
I agree
and that's because the big boss wears orange.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about Braley or?
No. The one below.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, even like... I mean, because honestly, I think from what I read, it looks like Braley puts in just about the same amount of money, like he actually invests. But, like you said, Ackles just does a lot better job of marketing, operating the team. They have their own facility. Like, just the way they do everything is just perfect. Like, they nail it,
Who, BC?
That's why BC. That's why every year, if you notice, they've been competitive. If I'm not mistaken, they've made the playoffs every year going back to, like, I think 1990-something, right?
I think it's 16 years or something.
Yeah, 16 years straight. I mean, think about that. Like, the Tiger Cats didn't have a win. They had their first winning record in the last 13 years, this last season. That's just just to show you just how bad you can be and just how great the Lions are. I think that's amazing.
The Lions are a wonderful team right now, but we've had a 21-year streak without a Grey Cup, right? I think Toronto's hit 26. What's Winnipeg at right now? 23 years. So each city, each team goes through shit.
Right,
but
I mean, it's one thing not to win a Grey Cup. That's okay, as long as you're competitive and you have a legitimate chance to contend.
Yeah,
that's the main thing.
We were historically the bottom of the league for so many years. Is ridiculous. It's pathetic.
Yeah,
how bad BC was
the late 70s, and then in the 80s, you guys got really good again. You had those back and forths with Winnipeg. And then the 90s were all right. Then from 2000 on, you guys pretty much been at the top of the West every single season, and that's...
Yes, yes.
I mean, who else
Wally Buono came in what, 2004 or something, that, I mean, we've been dominant.
Right.
And it's going to happen again this year. If Lule, if we can have a pivot that is going to be consistently healthy,
mm-hmm.
BC will take over the dominance from Calgary again.
Yeah, I know.
Calgary
I agree with
the dominant team this year.
Yeah, no question. I think the CFL on both sides, it's going to be Saskatchewan and BC in the west, and it's going to be Hamilton, Toronto in the east. I think that's your two, those are your two powers in each division that are going to be butting heads.
Well, I think Saskatchewan's coming apart at the seams this year.
Oh, you got to be kidding me, man. Like,
no, I don't.
Okay.
Seriously,
they're
going to lose a lot of their
players. Show me one player that potentially is going to do that for them.
Wait, you mean Sheets and Dressler both look like they're leaving? They have 23 free agents, the most in the entire league.
Right.
They're not going to be able to sign them all. They're not going to be able to put out the money that they did last year. It's just, I don't believe it. I don't think they're going to be able to be the powerhouse that they think they were. And they weren't a powerhouse this year.
Yeah, okay, so let's just clarify one thing. They lost Keith Scholligan, a guy they were willing to let go, who they were paying $180,000 to, right? That's a big hit off the cap they just got free from. They didn't need him anymore because they had the Canadian depth. And secondly, they also can let go of Giroux Simon and his $190,000 contract, which is they're basically waiting on Dressler to see if Dressler signs, Giroux is out the door. If Dressler goes to the NFL, they're just keeping Giroux as a safety. But
yeah.
Corey Sheets isn't going to the NFL. You can forget about that. That's not happening. No, he's not. He's not made for the NFL. I mean, his game, he's a guy that likes playing angles. That's why the wide field, that's why if you notice, almost all his best plays are when he uses the whole width of the field, and he basically beats the defender to the edge and then goes up. You know, you guys know what I'm talking about? Like,
he's an
angle runner. He uses angles. That's how he's not the fastest. He's not the most agile, but he's really smart with his angles and his vision.
Yeah.
And that works in the CFL. In the NFL, plus he's not that big, he'd get destroyed. Because in the NFL, you got to run between the tackles, and you got to have power, or you got to have out of this world speed. And he doesn't have either. So what is he going to do in the NFL?
I gotcha. Well, the NFL.
You know what? And actually, you do bring up a point now that I'm sitting there thinking about the Riders' games. That's the way he runs. If he do run in between the tackles, because he have a big hole that he can go through without getting untouched. But he does beat the defenders off the edge, and that's where he get most of his yards, off the edge, the right edge or the left edge. You're right. You're right.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't power up the middle like Cornish does.
Yeah.
No.
Like Cornish is a guy that could play in the NFL. He has a size and a game that's more NFL type, you know?
Yeah.
He's a classic NFL running back.
He's more of a power back.
But he wouldn't be that good in the NFL.
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't even get on the field. Forget about that.
No, it was some team that was interested in him, but they said basically special teams, if anything.
Right, no, of course.
Now, the NFL stole the type of quarterback we had, you know, Warren Moon and company. Then they stole our kicking. The NFL didn't care about black quarterbacks, didn't care about kickers. Now they care about kickers. And now I hear they're going to widen their field.
Oh, yeah. Look at the NFL. The NFL's changing its rules to be more CFL-like every year. Like, I'm just waiting for the day for them to get rid of the fourth down and make it a three-down game because, you know. I guarantee you, they look at the CFL and they say to themselves, man, if we had those rules with that field, our game would be 10 times more entertaining and we'd have more
offensive. And it
would be. Yeah, and it'll happen eventually, you know, because the defenders are just too talented in the NFL. Like, they're too big, they're too fast, they can cover way too much ground so quickly that, you know, that small field is making it a little bit difficult on offenses. That's why they're eventually going to widen it. Even in basketball, they're talking about in the NBA and in college basketball widening the court because defenses are just too good and the players are too fast that they cover that space way too quickly and the offenses need more room. Like even in hockey, people talk about maybe having less players in hockey or a bigger rink just because to give more space and ability for your offensive guys to showcase their skills.
Absolutely.
And have, you know, so.
Well, the international ice rink is better than the NHL rink, and they've always talked about going to the international rink over it for that.
Yeah, but they made
reason.
Bettman changed that.
Bettman's an idiot, and it's about time that he died.
Yeah, because every league around the world, they gotta understand people want to watch offense. I know, you know, the hardcore football and sport fans, we can appreciate good defense, but offense sells tickets and it makes money, right? So anything you can do to improve your offensive performance and, you know, showcase your offensive skills more, the better it will be for your league. So,
well, the NBA got rid of zone defenses. The NBA got rid of zone defenses, and now it's back to defenses again are still being tough because we're starting to see these games again, you know, 87 to 80.
Yeah, yeah, like the Indiana Pacers and the Miami Heat. You know, teams like that, you need a bigger court just because the athletes. I mean, these guys, they can cover, you know, so much ground so quickly that the space they do have, it's almost irrelevant, like, because they're just too fast, right?
Well, the irony is that the CFL has a bigger field, but their players are smaller.
Yeah.
If you
go back into the early 70s.
But you got small players in it. You got small players in the NFL, too. So that size thing they be talking about, smaller, faster, and stronger compared to bigger, I believe the sizes of the players, CFL and NFL, is about the same. Because you got small players in the NFL, too.
If you go back into the early 70s, before the big dollars hit the NFL, before the TV rights, before everything else, when the salaries were comparable back and forth between the leagues.
The Argos outbid the Washington Redskins for Joe Theismann.
But the American players wanted to play the CFL game because it was more exciting. It was more fun to play as a pure experience. It was better to play the Canadian game.
Yep.
That's why we brought in a Canadian content rule. Because there was too many Americans coming north, okay? And they wanted to play our game because it was more fun to play. We put in the Canadian content rule, great, everything else. TV rights went nuts. Everybody wants to play in the NFL now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had comparable salaries between the CFL and the NFL right now, we'd have the same problem with everybody coming north because the game's better to play.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But you know what?
Not everybody, but a lot of people. Theismann didn't come up north, right, because he wanted to play in America. But, you know, not everybody's going to play for the dollars.
Right.
So,
let's see, if you get everybody that want to come up, if everybody want to come up north, if their salaries were the same and everybody want to come north to Canada to play, with that being said, you'll have more teams that will be expansion teams in Canada and some of the cities that want teams.
Yeah, but that's not gonna happen. But what I love what Manasseh is saying, where the U.S. game is becoming more of this Canadian game, more of the exciting,
really
fast-paced, ripping game. I that's exciting to hear. I never even thought about it. I've never even heard anything like that. That's
exciting. Yeah, that's what they're doing. And I think if Manasseh, you can help me out if I'm wrong. I think they're gonna implement them rules in the next couple of years, if I'm not mistaken, with the field. Am I right?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, especially the end zone. They've really talked a lot about expanding the end zone and the winding the field thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know this, but a lot of the new stadiums that are getting built, like the new Viking Stadium and the new Atlanta Falcons Stadium, they've actually designed it so that their seats are like the BC Lions Stadium, where they have their hydro pump so you can move them in and out. So they're basically, the newer stadiums, they're anticipating the NFL fields getting bigger, so they're designing the fields to fit the new potential dimensions.
That's exciting. That's exciting.
Don't be surprised if like Manasseh said, they're gonna get rid of the fourth down. And to the
that
NFL,
might be a little,
be
that
right
might be a little too much, though, don't you think?
No,
that's
I
like
don't
going
really
metric. That's like going metric.
Not,
I mean, look at this one now. Like, you can't even touch an NFL quarterback. Like, if you put your hand on Tom Brady in a way that the referees would deem even disrespectful, they're throwing a flag every time. It's not even funny. I mean, it's getting comical to the point the NFL is going to, even on like on the defensive secondary, guys. I mean, you make any contact, it's an automatic pass interference 9 times out of 10. It's getting ridiculous. Like Ed Reed was coming out the other time talking about how the NFL has basically cut defenders' legs from underneath them and not even allowing them to play at all and do anything. You know, it's like they want them to play touch
and
football
threaten to
or
retire.
Football. Right.
And threaten to retire.
Yeah, the NFL is becoming a big joke. Like I said, I'm not an NFL fan, but I'm a Detroit Lions fan, and that's the only time I watch the NFL games when Detroit is playing. Other than that, I'm watching CFL every Friday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday when the games come on. You know, NFL is a big joke to me. You can't really do nothing in the NFL. They done watered it down so bad until they need to come with something fresh to make some of the fans come back. Because a lot of people, you know, a lot of people don't like the NFL.
It's boring to watch.
Yeah, the NFL, you know, the sad thing about the NFL does, too, is it ruins exciting players. Like, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but take Michael Vick, RG3, Cam Newton, potentially Johnny Manziel coming up. These guys that are mobile, that can explosive guys, that can just, you know, that are fun to watch, buy time, you know, all the stuff that fans like to see. Those guys, within 2-3 years, their games get totally restructured because they can't do that in the NFL. Defensive players are way too big. They have little to no room to actually operate, and those guys get limited. And now you look at him, look what happened to RG3, the guy in his second year. He's already suffering injuries of a guy that played, you know, 5-10 years. Look at Michael Vick, one of the most exciting players in the history of the NFL, has basically his entire body's broken down. You put those guys in the CFL.
Yeah, but Michael Vick's been dogged with some other problems.
No, but I'm talking about strictly football. Like, you know, I know we can say that, but we're talking in the game wise. I would pay money to watch Michael Vick rather than Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, because those two guys are just going to sit in the pocket. They're going to throw the right pass. They're not going to do anything to excite you. They're going to do, you know, they're Ricky Rays. Like, give me Zach Caleros over Ricky Ray any day of the week. You know, I'm just, as a fan, that's just the honest truth. I get it. You know, those guys are more efficient. They're effective. They win. But I'm not paying to watch you win a game. I'm paying and I'm spending my time to be entertained. And if I'm doing that for 2 or 3 hours, I want to see something exciting. I don't want to see, you know, the dump pass or the little 5-yard hitch pass and, you know, and see you throw an 85% completion rate and you didn't even throw the ball more than 15 yards down the field. I'm not trying to see that. You know,
well, we
got to
leave it there, guys. We're down to the last 30 seconds of the show.
No, we're not.
What?
Did you start at 6 o'clock?
6 o'clock? Oh, yeah, you're in the West time. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah.
Oh, did I come into the show an hour late?
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to tell you.
I thought you had said before that Friday nights was going to be at 7 o'clock or at 10 o'clock.
That's what
I was sitting around on my ass killing time waiting for the show to start.
That's why I said to you, do you want me to change the time to 10 o'clock?
Well, you had said before that you had changed the time on Friday nights till 10 o'clock because everybody could stay up later.
Oh, okay. No, I
so
said
I was assuming that Friday night game was at 10 o'clock.
I don't disagree that you would have heard that. You might have thought you heard that. But what I was saying was, do you want me to change it to 10 to be more confused? You said, don't bother. Okay, we only got 5 seconds left. Thanks for listening to Ken and Frank Live. Mike, Christopher, Manasseh, and Frank. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Red Blacks.